rest of my days unhappy. Why would I spend the rest of this year alone when I can go therapy? When I can go therapy, when I can go therapy 2 times a day. Why would I spend the rest of this week so bitter? And all that listening is making you bitter too. When I can go therapy, when I can go therapy, when I can go therapy 2 times a day. I don't wanna be around me, and I don't blame you if you're blocking all my calls. Been a while since I've been sleeping soundly. Most nights I lie awake between 2 and 4. Why would I spend the rest of my days unhappy? Why would I spend the rest of this year alone when I can go therapy? When I can go therapy? When I can go therapy 2 times a day? I care more about what you think than I care about the music. When I get cross with you, I'm surprised you care at all. I figure if I had a lifetime of time left, well, shame on me if I don't get to you that well. Yeah, I'm stressing you out, and at the way it's going, you need it more than me. Why would I spend the rest of this year alone when I can go therapy? When I can go therapy? When I can go therapy 2 times a day? Someone help me, turn me right.
Love and life that we have, baby, we need rehab. This is a two. night. You keep cutting me off, can I even get a single word in with you? Can I wait? Let me explain. You keep cutting me off. Can I even get a single word in with you? Cause all I hear is wah, 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 listen to them, and they ain't got no man. They just jealous of us, cause they wanna be you, baby. If you would stop cutting me off and let me explain a little, you would know that I love you, but now and never cheat on you.
I don't even know about all that. I mean, you ain't even acting like a real man, making promises you can't keep, and you never listen. What am I doing?
Can I even get a single word with you? Baby, can I wait? Let me explain. You keep cutting me off. Can I even get a single word in with you? Cause all I hear is wah, 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 ooh, ooh, ooh. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Wah, 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 ooh, ooh,
welcome to Real Talk with Tammy.
Real Talk with Tammy.
Yeah. morning, everyone. This is Real Talk with Tammy, and you got it right. It's your girl, Tammy. Today is Saturday, March the 22nd, 2014. We have the funny this morning. You know, we go through our week and we have struggles and issues and ups and downs, and a lot of us who have to commute, we have frowns on our faces. By the time we get home, we're frustrated and this and that. But the Bible in Proverbs 17:22 says, a joyful heart is good medicine, but a crushed spirit dries up the bones. Well, this morning, we are going to have a joyful heart with my friend, my man, T.P. Lucas. He is probably not most famous, but I learned to love him most when I heard him on nationally syndicated show, Divorce Court. Unfortunately, that's where I heard him first, but he is hilarious, and I can't wait for you all to talk to him. I want to let you know what the call-in number is right up front. It is 347-327-9056. The lines are already open, but you know what? We're going to be laughing so hard, we may not even hear y'all. Everybody, welcome to Real Talk with Tammy, our guest for today, Mr. T.P. Lucas. Welcome to the show,
hey,
T.P.
Man. Hey, thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you. Thank you. Wonderful,
man,
wonderful to be here.
I've been looking forward to this show because I need to get my laugh on. And I know from conversations with you, you will definitely get us yucking it up this morning. What's going on with you, Brother TP?
Oh, man, I'm just traveling the country on my TP Lucas U.S. Comedy Tour. And stopping summer everywhere, having a ball with the good people of our good nation, and, you know, sharing good times and just, you know, telling jokes and, you know, occasional lie here and there. But we have some good times doing all of this, you know. I just love what I do. I'm blessed to be able to do it. Before we get started, I'd like to, you know, just get a couple of shout-outs out the way because, my first shout out is the biggest shout out to our maker, my God and Savior up above, for making me the person I am today, for giving me the trials and tribulations that I've been through so that I can appreciate who I've become. So first shout out to my God. And along the way, yes, and along the way, I had to do a lot of things in this comedy game. I mean, I've been all across the board. There are very few comedians in this country that have experienced in this business some of the things that I've experienced. KAZI 88.7 FM in Austin, Texas. Shout out to y'all. I had the number one show on their airwaves down there for 2 years in a row. And I left there to go to Texas City and become the general manager of a comedy club right outside of Houston called the Texas City Zookeeper. And the blessing in that is even though I was the general manager and the host of the show and the DJ and the booking agent, I got to meet some of the coolest comedians in the country the 3 years that I was there. So now that I brought up some of the comedians, first and foremost, I got to shout out comedian Jeff B. out of Chicago. This guy here, oh, my God. I'm sure that after divorce court and everything, we'll realize that I'm vision impaired. And, when that happened, I lost a great deal of my independence. And I got to shout Jeff B. out because he's the only comedian, and I say the only one, that took me out on the road with him for weeks and helped me reinvent myself. You know what I'm saying? So big shout out to Jeff B. in Chicago. Also Mocha, the Duchess of Comedy down there in Toledo, Ohio. Got to shout her out. She's like my sister in this game. And everybody knows one of my closest homies, Pierre. You know, he was in all of the movies, How to Be a Player, Babs, and all of that. So these are just my closest friends in the game. I can't forget about Shane Forbes. Shane, he, you know, without Shane, I probably wouldn't be doing this right now because long time ago I toured with him and I lost my voice at the end of the tour, And I don't know how he did it, but he talked me into performing totally hoarse like that. And you had to be quiet enough to hear a pin drop to catch the punchline. And that audience did it, and they gave me a lot of love. And it just showed me no matter what goes on, you never quit. You just keep it. Just the show must go
Amen.
On. So big shout out to all those nice comedians and good people that helped me along the way, because I needed you guys, and I really appreciate you, you know?
Because
you can't do this by yourself.
Did you
can't
just
do
have
this
an
by
emotional
yourself.
Moment?
I couldn't
Y'all
help it.
Know.
You know
oh,
what I'm
yeah.
saying?
I mean, big boys cry, too. I mean, you know, it's okay to have an emotional moment, and I think it's really great and honorable of you to even take the time to mention and acknowledge these people because, you know what, when people start to get where they should be going or they get on the right path, they tend to forget about where they came from or who was there to help them out and who gave them a hand, and they just don't look back. They don't want to acknowledge that, so I applaud you for doing that. That is a big thing, especially for our men. Men don't, haven't seen too many men who typically want to do that.
I'm not the average guy, though. You know what I'm saying? I grew up way different than a lot of kids, even though I was with other kids growing up like me, you know, just like in our community, the urban community, there are so many fatherless children there. So I was one of those, and then at a certain age, like when I got to be like 12, 13 years old, I wound up being labeled like a bad kid, you know? So I wound up in the system, the foster care system, and thank God for foster care because they saved me. I want you to know that.
Really?
They stopped me from being a product of my environment.
That.
Yes.
Wow,
oh, if you
amazing.
Were my parents, you would be praising foster care, too.
Well,
yes,
we need to shout
yes.
out to your parents who got you back on the right path.
Yeah. I'll, you know, especially that last one, you know. And then I left foster care, you know, I was 17, didn't graduate from high school, and I was a part of that last group that was able to go into the military without a high school diploma. And that was back in 84. And the cool part about it was is I wound up getting to Uncle Sam. They didn't tell me this when I signed the paperwork. But after I graduated basic training in AIT, they sent my butt right back to school. So I wound up getting educated anyway. And, you know, shout out to the United States Army, even though I joked all the time that USARMY on my chest, Uncle Sam ain't released me yet. Because, you know, to me, I felt like, and I still feel like this. I mean, this is the greatest country on the planet, and our troops, our soldiers, the only problem I've ever had is how can I be willing to voluntarily go fight and or die for a country that cares less about how I live in it? That's where the discrepancy came. And the cool part about it is I get to be an advocate now for the younger soldiers that went and fought, and when they get home, I'm totally an advocate for people treating them like the heroes they are. You know what I'm saying? Because while we were here being safe in our country, they were in another country making sure we stay safe. So we need to acknowledge these men and women of all of the armed forces. Way better than we have ever, period. And I don't mean just a ticker tape parade, welcome home. No, they need to be welcome every day of their life after an experience like that, you know, every day.
I totally agree. I mean, I am recently been made a Navy mom. My son, shout out to my son, Seaman Isaac Kinder. He is away in the middle of the Mediterranean Sea right now, and I am getting together his first box, his first care package. And, I mean, I'm extremely emotional about that thing because even though he's a grown man, he's still my baby. He's still my son. But I often tell him as every time I talk to him, I tell him that I love him and that I'm extremely proud of him. He is third-generation military. My father was in the Army. He served in Vietnam. My grandfather was in World War II. He was a tanksman. So, I mean, I truly understand what the plight is. And I just, all I could do is shake my head when I see things that happen to our soldiers when they're not they're mistreated, when they are not well received. And the fact that they can come home from serving us and could barely even get a job, that tears me up.
Yeah, that's just blatant disrespect, you know, blatant disrespect. But it's going to change. And I'm going to tell you how I know it's going to change. Because I prayed on it. And that's powerful stuff right there.
Yeah.
That's powerful, powerful stuff. You know, because, see, I got a direct line. Me and God, we real cool. You know what I'm saying? So when I pray, he listens.
No.
he might not get right to it right away. Yeah. Hey, God didn't make no junk, and that includes me.
Right.
Yes. And I mean, like I said, I get into it. I'm a really, as an individual, a deep person. It's just that when I hit that stage, there comes my alter ego, you know, and some of the things that I cannot say normally, I get to say on stage, you know. And
okay.
and it's never offensive. It's always entertaining.
But, you know, all right, so far we've learned, we've got VTP Lucas on our show. The call-in number is 347-327-9056. If you want to talk to TP, we've so far learned that he grew up in the foster system. He went into the military. He's an advocate now for that. He loves comedy. But here's what I want. Let's get some of the big questions that people have asked me when they saw that you were coming on the show. First question I have is, obviously you've been in the military, so this answer would be a no, but have you always been visually impaired to some degree? Yes, no, and if not, tell us how it happened.
Well, I've always wore glasses, just regular nearsighted glasses, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And that was all my life up until I discovered glaucoma is what happened to make me become vision impaired. I used to be a tractor trailer driver, drove semi truck, and I was involved in a traffic accident on the interstate up in upper state New York, and my truck tipped over and hit the divider rail, the guard between the two highways, that center divider. Anywho, I hit my head incredibly hard and banged my shoulder up and everything. And to this day, I still have no idea how I got that truck back all up. I didn't get that truck back up on 18 wheels.
Mm-hmm.
God
you already
pushed
know,
it back up
it.
On 18 wheels.
Mm-hmm.
Right, because all I could do was scream and hold on. There's still a crease in the seat where my behind was holding on. I was so scared. So I just felt like that was my last day. And then, you know, the concussion wound up going into a little deeper. And then I was having problems, and I went in for a physical and everything, and that's when glaucoma was discovered, and it was advanced at the time, and we caught it too late, and I didn't know to look for it because I knew my mom's side of the family, but I didn't know my father's side of the family, and that's where it come from. The type of glaucoma that I have is inheritable. You don't just get that. You got to get it from your bloodline. And so once I became vision impaired, the whole world just became instantly scary because at that time I was 39. I'm 47 now, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, and that's back again. I got to bring Jeff B. name back up because all I was scared. And he's like, man, forget about all of that. Let's go, you know. And he helped me get my mojo back out there by embracing it. And exploiting it, so to speak, because there's a lot of, you know, I mean, like, crazy stuff happens, you know, that people don't understand when they don't have a vision impaired person in the house. They have pamphlets and everything for the families and stuff like that. Those pamphlets did my household absolutely no good. I have small children, so I'm constantly tripping over toys, stepping on barrettes and carrying on. But you're supposed to, when you have vision impaired people at your house, you're supposed to, like, you get up on the kitchen table, you're supposed to slide the chair back under there. My wife refused to do that. You should see my shins. Tell me, oh, my goodness. They got dips and I done banged up my legs the whole 9 yards. But that's how I became visually impaired, and it's, since I was 39 till now. And I really can't complain about it. Now I done got used to it, you know? I done got used to it. Like I said, the only frustrating part about it is bumping into stuff.
You have such a powerful testimony. I mean, you were talking about how you became visually impaired, but you escaped. You had a near-death experience. You know for sure that the father has flipped that 18-wheeler back over. And the fact that you are walking tall and doing it is absolutely correct. At the beginning of the show, you said, no matter what's going on, you have to keep moving forward. And, I mean, who better to tell you something like that than somebody who is actually a living testimony of how to do that? I really, really applaud you. Man, you do have some deep points. I mean, you really do have some deep stuff inside of you. It might be funny, but a brother is funny deep, y'all. What is your motivation?
Yeah.
You deep funny. You're deep, deep funny. A couple of weeks ago, you were involved with Kiss Your Self-Esteem, was something put together by a friend named Stephanie Moore, Stephanie D. Moore. How important is it to you as a father to play a good role in the life of your daughter?
It is actually at the top of the important list. First off, my drive, my ambition, my energy, my power comes from my children. You know, God gave them to me because he knew that I was prepared to raise them. You know what I'm saying? I had raised two other children before them, but biologically they weren't mine. You know, and I don't like to say that, excuse me, because I've never called my oldest son my stepson ever said that, because I didn't like that. It's like a word that word step disassociates him from being as close as he really is. So I've never did that. And the only reason why I brought that up is because he had to go through some court situations this year, and it never crossed my mind that he wasn't my stepson until the judge brought it up. That he was my stepson until the judge brought it up. I was like, yeah, I understand your stepdad is visiting and praying. I was like, stepdad? That's my son. What are you talking about?
You who
know,
are you talking
but,
to?
Right. So, but when my first child was born, which is my daughter, I was 40 years old. And then my son, he'll be 2 next month. I was 45 when he got here. So he waited to give me children. Right. You know, I'm like, hey, small piece of leather well put together, though. There's a lot of, you know, hey, this kind of snow on the roof don't mean ain't no fire in the place now.
Right.
Well, we worked it out, you know. Matter of fact, me and my wife just had an argument the other day about another baby. I was like, by who? By who are you trying to get pregnant by? Because I'm done. I quit.
You.
Like, she said, so she asked me clearly, what was I going to do about it? But my energy, my drive, my ambition, I have got to do more than anyone has ever done for me for my kids. You know, so I take that upbringing that I got, you know, I looking out the window for my dad to come when he never showed up for, you know, birthdays, holidays, and stuff like that. All of that, I take all of that and I take that energy instead of using it for anger and hatred and anything else negative that you can come up with. I take that energy because that energy is mine to do what I want to do with. And I take that energy and I generate it in a positive manner, and I use it to strengthen myself to be a better parent than I've ever had for my own children. You know what I'm saying? So, you know, I can't look at the cup as half empty when I look at my childhood. I got to look at it as half full because I had to learn how to be a better person than the people were to me. You know,
wow.
And it's like you treat them like you want to be treated, you know. So I treat my kids the way I always wanted to be treated, you know.
So my pastor says that, you know, basically in a nutshell, what you're saying is just because your upbringing was foul doesn't mean that that's what you have to demonstrate in your own life.
you know, those people who claim being a product of their environment, that was a choice. Because just like many of my peers chose to become dead or in prison by living a reckless lifestyle, which I did also, but it didn't take me long to learn that, you know, the gang didn't have an insurance policy or any kind of benefits or anything, you know. When the opposing gang beat me up and left me in the hospital, you know, the gang that I was supposed to be a member of didn't even pay me, you know, a visit or help me with the bills or nothing. So I knew then, this is not the lifestyle for me. I got something better to do than what you fools are up to. So, hasta la vista, you know, c'est la vie. I can't do this. You know, I've had it rough all my life. I'm looking for an easier road. And I'm going to tell you how I found out that I was a comedian. It was a total accident. I was, matter of fact, one of my best friends in the whole world to this day, if you Google him, shout out to him too, DJ Pierre. He and I, we were, you know, teenage buddies and everything, and we hung out with a couple of other buddies, and he accidentally, trying to make a bass line with a Roland 303, invented a genre of music known as acid house. So eventually he got signed to Jive Records, and my ex-wife, not the one you saw me on divorce court, the one before that, oops. Anywho.
Oh, boy.
We'll get to that later.
Yeah, we
don't
get to that.
We get to that. Anywho, she was one of the singers for him on that label. And I helped produce music, and I wrote songs too. And so I started out in music. And R. Kelly always mentions this DJ, Wayne Williams, in his songs. Well, at that time, he was the A&R for Jive Records Chicago. And I was in the studio all the time, doing nothing, hanging out, but I was getting paid.
Okay,
so I'm like, Wayne, man, why do you always got me in the studio and you really don't want, you know, got nothing for me to do? He's like, dude, everybody love you. You make studio time go by fast because you're hilarious. And I'm like, what? You got me here for jokes and giggles? He's like, man, dude, we got a surprise for you. And they took me to the comedy club. And I'm thinking I'm there with everybody just to enjoy myself. But the host of the show goes, yeah, we have a very funny man in the house tonight. He doesn't even know, you know, his friends put him up, you know, the friends are here to put him up to it. But I know he's very funny. Everybody says he is, by Skip Woo Woo. And Tim Lucas. I was like, I'll be damned. Mm-mm. I ain't going. Nope. I can't do it. Because I was, you know, I've never done it before. Well, Wayne Williams, you know, flipped me a couple of bucks, and I was like, what? He said, man, I dare you. You do it, you can have this. I was supposed to do 5 minutes. I'd never done comedy in my life, and I did 22 minutes. It felt like five. And the crazy part is, you know, all comedians know about the light. You know, they generally have a flashlight that they flash at you to let you know to wrap it up. Well, these people were in the back of the room flashing a flashlight all up at the ceiling. Now, I'm on stage looking up at the ceiling like, what are they looking for up there on that ceiling with this flashlight?
Wow.
So I had no idea. Nobody told me about the lighting. They just said, do 5 minutes, you know. Well, anyway, after the show, after my set, the club owner came up to me, and it was a lady club owner, and she was hot. She was very angry. And she goes, there's no way you're going to tell me you're not a professional. I was like, okay, but I'm not. I've never done this in my life. You've never been on a comedy stage before. Never in my life. And she was like, well, will you come back next week? I was like, no way. I'm never doing it again either because, you know, it was just too much pressure. Well, she reached in her brassiere and pulled out a $50 bill. I said, what kind did you want me here?
And I went back. When people start giving you money, you realize you can get paid for what you like to do is a different story.
Right. Wayne paid me $100 and the club owner paid me $50. I made $150 my first time ever grabbing a mic. There are comedians out there right now been doing comedy for years and can't make that.
Wow.
It's only funny because it shouldn't take you that long to realize that you're doing something wrong.
Wow.
Listen,
everybody, we are on, this is Real Talk with Tammy, and my special guest today is T.P. Lucas, bringing the funny to us. When we get back from this break, he's going to bring us even more funny. We're going to talk about, he's mentioned wives a couple of times, and I told you at the top of the hour that where I first heard about him was on Divorce Court. So when we get back, we're going to talk about love, relationships, and comedy and how all that matches together and how he can use that and how he has used that in his material. And you know what? I need to put you on pressure. I need you to do 5 minutes for us after we talk about love, relationships, and comedy. The call-in line, if you want to talk to TP, is 347-327-9056. We'll be back in a minute.
Creating a lasting legacy isn't always easy, but at Aridus Public Relations, we can help you create a legacy that lasts far beyond our time. Contact 901-828-6337. Whether it's media relations, event appearances, or press kits, let Aridus help you build your legacy. Contact 901-828-6337 or email info@airadespr.com.
What if you were wearing something sexy? What if you were drinking? What if you made the first move? No matter what, sexual assault is never your fault. Support is available 24/7 through the National Sexual Assault Hotline. Call 1-800-656-HOPE or visit RAIN.org. That's RAINN.org. This is Christina Ricci with RAIN, reminding you it's never your fault.
Brought to you by RAIN and this station.
We now join Rashida Lucas and T.P. Lucas as Judge Lynn hears their case.
Mr. Lucas, you have brought Mrs. Lucas here to court in order to recover either your 2000 Camry that you said you upgraded or the value of the upgrades that you put in the Camry that you say she took. And I know that you're wearing sunglasses, which usually is not permitted in a courtroom, but I understand that you have an eye issue, glaucoma, and the lights are bothering you. Mr. Lucas, I'm going to start with you. Why don't you tell me how we got here and why it is you needed to come to court to get this car back?
Well, Your Honor, there was nothing wrong. Nothing. You know, everything was normal at my house.
Everything was normal.
Nothing wrong. Nothing. Rashida told me, baby, I'll be back. And she left. You know, this was back in November.
Mrs. Lucas. Mr. Lucas says you had a great relationship.
Yes, we had a wonderful relationship.
Why don't you tell me what was wonderful about it?
It was wonderful. We were like best friends. I believe, you know, he's my soulmate. Everything was fine except he was too nice. It's too nice.
How does one be too nice to one's wife?
He was too nice, like it was scary nice. You know, it was like, you know the people that's it was like stalkerish nice, like you're too nice, it's too
give
good
me an
to be
example, because I cannot conceive of the world that you have structured for me here.
Right, I mean, you know, too nice, like he would say, I love you, and it was like, I was like, okay, I was waiting for the punch, when you going to kick me? It's scary. Some people just, you know, just, you could be nice, but
Mrs.
you could be
Lucas,
too nice.
You're going to have to do better than that.
Mm-hmm.
He told you he loved you and this was a problem. You put up your hands like, when is the punch going to come? You've been married for 5 years. Has he punched you yet?
No. No. He's a
he
wonderful
doesn't
man.
Punch you. He's a
he
wonderful
doesn't.
Man.
Yes, I'm just not
so
used to that.
So the I love you is too much for you.
It's not too much, but you don't have to tell me like twice a week.
Can't figure that.
So if I found you a brother that would run around on you, call your names, and smack you upside the head, you'd be in heaven.
No, he don't have to call me names or smack me, but...
He can run around on you.
No, not that either, but...
What do you want from a man, Mrs. Lucas?
Yes.
I mean... she told me that's what she wanted.
What
did she tell you she wanted?
Well, she told me she wanted somebody to cherish her and to don't run around on her. She, you know, all the things that a good man and a good woman should want out of each other. We agreed that because I had been married before, and my ex-wife, oh, my goodness, she scared me. If I ever did it again, it was going to be better than any other marriage, and I made the promise for keeps. This wasn't to be playing around, you know. And if nothing's wrong, where are you going? You know?
Everybody, this is Real Talk with Tammy, and what you just heard was a small clip of the episode where our special guest today, T.P. Lucas, was on Divorce Court. If you were like me and you used to watch it a lot, you saw him, and that's where I first saw him, and that's where I was like, okay, ready to jump through the screen and be like, what are you talking about to his ex-wife? And but my first question was, why in the world would you want to come on nationally syndicated TV and tell everybody your business? So that's my first question to you. What made you decide to resolve this, settle this, end this on Divorce Court?
The thing is we were having, you know, too many issues. I couldn't get down there to Chicago. She wouldn't come up here. And she said, well, you know, we can go here. And I agreed. This was all her idea. And I agreed. You're going to see me face-to-face some kind of how, you know. And then, you know, I talked to, you know, different friends of mine, especially my comedian friends. They were like, man, you better go on that. You ain't been on national TV. Go on, do what you got to do. And, you know, I was really, really, you know, against it at first. But they treated me so nice out there. I'm actually kind of glad I did. And then I get the ripple effect, the aftermath. It shows you how powerful positive energy is, because behind that, I got to meet some great people like yourself and Stephanie D. Moore and a host of other people who are legitimately rooting for me to continue doing what I do successfully.
So, I know. I'm not alone.
I might have lost a wife, but I gained a life.
I know for sure I'm not alone. I'm not the only woman in America and probably all over the world who was rooting for you on that day. So obviously you're not married to Rashida anymore. You mentioned before she was wife number two. You're married now. Yes?
Yes.
Which wife is this? Is this three?
Three.
Four?
This is number three.
Okay. Tell us about married life now. I mean, we know that you have had two children, and you're probably going to have another baby within the next year, whether you like it or not.
It's going to happen.
So tell us, how is married life these days?
Well, see, the cool part about this particular wife is I wasn't in the condition to judge a book by its cover. You see what I'm saying? Like many men choose women, it's all about judging a book by its cover. On my condition, there's no more of that. You treat me good, I treat you good. You cool, I'm cool, we cool. You know what I'm saying? And it's all about communication and compromise. Without communication, that's where you start to lose things. And a lot of people don't understand when they say their vows. They don't read between the lines. You see what I'm saying? Because death do us part don't mean all the time that someone has to die. There's a lot of things in a relationship that can die. The sex life can die. The communication can die. So there's a lot of things that describe death doing us part. You know what I'm saying? Not the literal person leaving this earth die. But, you know, when the relationship's dead, you know, communication, the sex, whatever, that's another form of death when it comes to marriage. So what we do is we just keep everything alive. Just keep everything alive. And besides, you know, I done got a little older. I'm too tired to run off. And
I mean, we after that episode, I don't think anybody will look at you as the unfaithful, unloyal type. And I agree, marriage is work, but you must have a lot of comedy to go feed off of when it comes to married life. I know there are so many things that I think is hilarious when it comes to marriage. Have you ever used your marriage in your routine?
Oh, all the time. My wives and children are always part of the routine because one of the things that has happened over the years since I've been doing it, they have a lot more comedians in the world today than they did when I started.
Hmm.
So, and 85% of those comedians use the other 15% of the comedians' material. You know what I'm saying? You know, we have
do
actual comedians. You know?
Wow. Mm.
Yeah, it's just the reality of it. But even Bernie Mac said that when another comedian tell your joke, that's a high form of flattery because that lets you know your material is so good to where they even wanted to use it.
Mm.
And, you know,
well,
and Bernie Mac is a good guy.
Give us some funny, off the cuff, give us some funny. Make us yuck it up today on Real Talk with Tammy. I know me, when I'm talking to you, you are just full of jokes. I remember the conversation we had when you were talking about getting into a fist fight and you really don't fight. Why? Why?
Ain't no sense in me. I've been cut that out. Ain't no sense in me picking no fights with nobody. I can't see the punches coming in the first place. So I'm really a nice guy. You know, we can talk about this. Now, if you want to have a verbal disagreement, I'm more down with that because I'm a verbal assassin. I get you verbally, but I can't throw no punches, you know, and none of that happens, you know. But and it's just like people ask me all the time after the show, man, you want to go to the club? I was in Atlanta, and Shorty was like, come on, man, we're going to the script club. And I was like, really? Come on, my treat, man. I'm taking you to the strip club. I was like, listen to yourself. You know what I'm saying? You see these glasses and this stick, and you want to take me to the strip club. What am I supposed to see in there? You know?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I let Shorty talk me into going anyway, and I felt like a pedophile because them kids was babies in that
mm-hmm.
club, you know, young, and I'm like they daddy's age. I felt bad. I was trying to talk them out of it. Find something else to do, girl. Go on to school. You know what I'm saying? Make it rain with
that's
a degree.
Okay, a degree. To get some kind of degree.
Right, some kind of degree. But, no, I talk about a lot of, you know, a lot of different things. Like, for instance, my kids are the most amazing people I know. My little girl, we were at the grocery store, and, you know, my little girl is, like, a huge help because she, you know, watch out, Daddy, don't bump into this, and, you know, she's there. She's right there for me. She's got my back. So we're in the grocery store, and she's in the cart, and she's like, Daddy, Daddy, let me out of the cart. And I'm like, what's the matter? You got a pee? You know, I check out the cart. And she takes off running over to this Mexican family.
Yeah.
And she starts talking to these people. And she's over there just bobbing her head, and she's in the conversation, and the lady talking to her. Lady gets done talking to her, and she comes over to me, and she says, sir, it's really nice that you taught your child Spanish. And I was like, I ain't taught her nothing. You know, Dora the Explorer is bad. Got my baby in the grocery store speaking Spanish.
Right.
Wow. But you got to be careful, because so I just started watching the programs with them because I'm like, wow, you know, I'm, you know, keeping up with my kids. But there was one that I almost got my baby in trouble. They got that one cartoon called Ni Hao Kai Lan. And that's where
okay.
they teach the children Chinese. Well, I come out of the bathroom, and my daughter standing in front of the TV talking about, shit. I'm like, what? I know she ain't in here cussing. Shit. Oh, you about to get it now. But something told me to stop and pay attention. Come to find out, in Chinese, shia means snow. So it's a good thing I paid attention to what my daughter was watching. Otherwise, I'd have whooped her butt for nothing. You know what I'm saying? And if you're old school, you know about a for nothing butt whooping. because everybody had them cousins that came from out of town and got you in trouble. And then you know how you remember this? Who did that? Oh, don't nobody know, huh? So I'm going to whoop everybody but just to make sure I got the right ones. Remember that?
What did you call it?
It's
what kind of butt
whooping
is that? A for nothing
it's
but?
It's a for nothing but what? Right. Because, see, I didn't never do nothing. It was always one of my cousins. But, you know, the no snitch policy has been around a long time. So I was scared to tell because my cousins were bigger than me. And, you know, I didn't want to fight with them. So now I got to get a beating with them. So I just started snitching because that's just the way it is. Look, you get yourself in trouble, that's all your business. Don't bring me into your nonsense.
Right.
You know,
for
he
nothing.
Did it. Yeah, it's for nothing but whooping.
For nothing but whooping. I think
yeah,
children, teenagers, people all over the world will agree that they have gotten at least one for nothing but whooping, for real. But it made us stronger. It made us better people, didn't it?
Yes. Yes. And then, you know what else made us stronger and better people?
What?
That direction at the dinner table. You know, remember when Mama cooked? If you didn't want what she cooked, you didn't eat. We didn't have all of these decisions and privileges that these children have today. We didn't have all of that.
Not at my house. You eat what you got in front of you, or that's it.
Right. And then, like, my birth mom, her answer to everything was a butt whooping. that was the key, you know. And I remember, I just think that all parents today should be more truthful with their kids about what's really going on. If you don't have the cash to get it, tell them, we don't have the cash to get that. We don't have the funds to get that. Don't say something crazy or stupid that they're going to remember the rest of their life. You know what I'm saying? Like, there's been times where, you know, we didn't have groceries. And, you know, Mom, I'm hungry. You hungry, go to bed. Now, that's abuse. I promise you. That is abuse. Now, every time, I'm 47 years old. Every time I get too hungry, I fall asleep. You know? This is what it is.
Memory.
Every
it's
time.
It's that deep-seated root, that memory of no food, you go to sleep, you eat sleep for dinner. Wow.
Right, eat, sleep, right. And, you know, it is what it is. Like I said, I take everything that I ever done, and there's some humor in it. I remember when I was a kid having a problem with fractures. Now, growing up, I hung out with my grandfather all the time. Every Saturday we went to the junkyard, and we pulled parts and stuff because he had his own repair shop. My grandfather is actually... You know, they didn't base the show off him or nothing like that. It had nothing to do with my grandfather, but the character that Red Fox played on Sanford and Son, yeah, that was my grandfather all day long. They were the same height, same size, even favorite. You know what I'm saying? And I'm having problems with fractions in school. I've been working with my grandfather all my life. I know how to work on cars. I was changing transmissions by myself by the time I was 15. And he was disgusted at the bad report card. But my grandfather was the type of cat that would beat on a child physically. He would make you use your brain. Like, he'd get it under the hood of the car. Hand me a half inch. Hand me a 9/16. Hand me a 5/8. You know, and you over there fooling around like you don't know fractions. Every wrench you handed me is a fraction, ain't it, boy? Let's take that carburetor off and think about what you done did in school. I had problems with fractions again. You know,
I mean,
and,
it's a way to keep it fresh. Yeah.
Right. You know, and he taught me so many things. You know, he taught me that no matter what you purchase or who you purchasing it from, you're trading. You're trading your valuable cash for their valuable product. It's a trade. So I negotiate for everything now. I pay full price for nothing. I never have, you know. And that's just me.
That's the way to shop. So
let's
find out, where are you going to be? Where can we look for you in the next upcoming weeks, months? You said you were in Atlanta. Are you coming back to the ATL anytime soon? Where's your next show going to be held? Give us that information.
My next show is My next show is April 19th in Kenosha, Wisconsin. They asked me to come back. I was just there back in, I think it was February 21st I was there, and I did such a good job, they wanted me to come back. And me and Shane Forbes will be in Kenosha together on April 19th. After that, Jeff B and I are going to hit the road, and we'll probably wind up in Atlanta. But I know I got – my agent is just – she still got to send me an email of my schedule. But I think April 10th I'll be here in town at a club I didn't even know we had. Thank God for agents. I know I'll be in New Jersey June 15th with the legendary godmother of urban comedy, Tina Graham herself. She's not a comedian, but she introduced us to the comedians we love from Def Comedy Jam, because you had to go through her to get on the show. So I'll be there. I've been invited out to L.A. to the Comedy Store on the Sunset Strip, where Bob Sumner is. He's the executive producer of Def Jam, and he has a new television show now called We Got Next on Aspire. So I'm going out there to hang out with him and show and prove that I'm ready to be on the We Got Next show. If not, you know, you'll see me soon enough on TV. That's never really been a big deal to me this time around, because it ain't like I can watch it. So, you know. And, you know, that's another thing that I don't do. A lot of comedians, when they get off stage, they want you to buy their DVD. Well, what do I look like trying to sell you a high-definition DVD? So I just sell audio CDs. I'm back to the basics. You know what I'm saying? Like, right. What I used to get them for nothing but whoopers because of comedy albums by Richard Pryor and Red Fox and Dolemite and stuff like that. It got so bad.
Man.
I always knew I was going to do this. I always knew I was
Dolemite
gonna do this.
Was, whew, I don't think, whew. My goodness, that was some harsh listening. But hey, as he's counted as one of the greats, tell us, how can if somebody wants to book you? What's your website? How can they book TP Lewis?
Well,
Lucas,
I'm sorry,
how did I do that?
I'm always on Facebook. I live on Facebook. That's my second home. So if you just Google TP Lewis, it'll take you. I have like four different Facebook pages. They all are TP Lewis. My fan page is capital T, lowercase p, Lucas, and the other pages are capital T, capital P. But, yeah, it's easy to find me. My email address is comediantplucas@gmail.com. You can, you know, catch me there. I've been working real hard on getting into some of these comedy clubs like the Improv. I know that this August or July, I'll be at the Schomburg Improv doing some work down there. And they have like 28 sister clubs. And hopefully I can make it to the Gotham City Club out in New York, which is one of their sister clubs, which I shouldn't have a problem, because once a club owner or a promoter sees me, they want to see me again.
And that's a blessing. That is truly a blessing.
Yes. Yes. And again, shout out to Jeff B for helping me reinvent myself, because I needed it. I was in such a pitiful state at the time, to where, you know, I was so busy whining about being vision impaired, all angry with God, like, why me, why me? You know, none of that seemed to work. So reinventing myself came out to be the best deal.
Whining
and, you know,
and murmuring and complaining don't typically work. He says don't murmur or complain. Well, I hope that if you happen to be in Connecticut on the weekend of May 4th this year, that you will join me at my Black Tie book release party being held at the Atlantic Street Ballroom in Stamford, Connecticut. Hope to see you there if you're in the area. But you know what? I really appreciate the fact that you took the time to come on to Real Talk with Tammy. Shout out to Stephanie D. Moore, who actually put us in contact together on Facebook. Facebook is a really great tool. You know, this is just the beginning of a good relationship, because, you know, I don't anticipate only being on radio. I do see myself with my own talk show. I do see myself doing a lot of big things. So I am officially giving you an invite to, when you see a sister, come and join a sister wherever I am, whatever God sees fit to have me do. You know, it's been a real pleasure meeting you and having you onto the show. Is there anything that you would tell up-and-coming comedian, young, old, or whatever,